for better or worse. Let's see. I started recording, so I'll a little bit. So, hey, Reed. Well, welcome to Greek Club here at Contemplation Tower on the campus of Concordia Seminary during this holiest week of the church year. We are reading Hebrews 3, and boy, howdy, is there ambiguity in this text. And in fact, I came across a great phrase. I don't know if we'll get to 4:2, but I have Henry Alford's commentary here. It's a great commentary from the 19th century, and not an original edition, of course. And he refers to chapter 4, verse 2 as a locus desperatus. Now, I hadn't actually ever heard that phrase before, so I assume this means a place of desperation. So if we're lucky, we'll get there.
Is that Steve Alford, by the way?
Henry. Yeah. Steve Alford is like a basketball coach. Oh, man. We have a Hebrew scholar and a basketball coach here. So, okay, setting that aside, we're going to start at verse 16. Chapter 3, verse 16 is where we leave off. And we get a review of the interrogative pronoun, right? So verse 16. Tinescar akousantes par epikranon? Question. Al ou pantes hoi ex elthantes ex aegyptu dia mouzeos? Question. Right. And then we'll have two more questions actually in verse, or three more questions in verse 17 and 18. So again, we know from our modern punctuation that tinnis here is taken as an interrogative pronoun because it has an accent on the penult, right? The accent is always there. And so for who, that's a nominative plural, so for who, after they had heard, embittered or provoked God. I remember that the writer to the Hebrews is recalling the incident in the wilderness and the rebellion that Psalm 95, which he's just quoted, is talking about. So, again, we could take the participle probably. I thought you could even take it concessively, even after they had heard or although they had heard or something like that. Again, our friend par epikranon is from para pikrino, and this is just an aorist indicative active third person plural, and tinnis is the subject. Now, we have the next question begins with Allah, or an elided form of Allah, and which we translate as rather. So it's probably in contrast to the answer, not a few, but rather, da 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 da. We'll kind of take that understanding as I put my fancy schmancy microphone on. And rather, and now we ask a question with a form of ooh, right? And so we know the expected answer is, anybody? Yes. It was, wasn't it, is the form of the question. So it was, wasn't it, all those who had gone out of Egypt. Reed, there's that duplication again that you asked about, I think, last week, the ek, which just seems to be, you know, a Greek way of talking. Those who had gone out of Egypt through Moses. So in other words, the problem was not with just a few, so we can slack off and not think we're in danger, but it was actually everybody who provoked God in the wilderness. And we have to supply or repeat the verb, probably just par epikranon. Was it not all those who had gone out of Egypt through Moses who provoked God in the wilderness? Right. It's the writer to the Hebrews is being very hortatory here, as we'll see in 4:1. Let us fear, therefore, and so. Again, for me at least, growing up with TLH, I walk in danger all the way. You know, that kind of vigilant Christian existence to which he's calling the readers. So that's not too bad. Any questions about verse 16? We'll get another couple of short questions like that in verse 17, which reads at least something like this. Tisin de pros och thisen tes arakanta ete? Uke tois hamartesasin hon ta kola episen ente eremo? So again, two more questions. Tisin is the dative plural of the interrogative pronoun. So, and it is the, when you pros ochnidzo somebody, that is anger them, you become angry with someone in the dative. So in English we might translate it, and with whom did he, God, become, or even maybe here, actually remain angry? And now we have an accusative time phrase, 40 years. And so this is the typical Greek way of expressing the extent of time. And that's what it's called in the grammar, is the accusative of extent. And we would translate for 40 years. So a question, with whom was he angry or provoked for 40 years? Question. Now here's another question that has a form of u, so we expect the positive answer. It was, and now we just repeat the dative, so again you pull the verb from the prior clause, he was angry, he was irritated, provoked, with those who sinned, wasn't he? And hamartesasen is just from hamartano, and it would be an aorist participle active, masculine plural dative. It was with those who sinned, wasn't it? And now we have the relative pronoun hon, of whom the limbs, a kolon, it's a neuter noun, is a limb. And I think, I didn't check it out extensively, I think this is actually the Greek word that we get, you know, our references to poetic fragments of poetry, a kolon, more than one kolon or kola. So in English, C-O-L-O-N, and it means a limb or a part of something. It's often translated here corpses or carcasses, but it's a little more gruesome if you leave it as limbs, actually. So we have the Israelites losing their arms and their shins and things like that. Of whom the limbs fell in the desert. It was the ones who sinned in this rebellious way, wasn't it? The answer is yes, it was. So, let's see, grammatically not too hard. Any questions? I did have to look up a couple of words here, but that's what lexicons are for. Okay.
Epizen from Pipto?
Yes, epizen from Pipto. Very good. Mm-hmm. That's right. Principal Parts Award of the day goes to Dr. Lessing. So, yep. Yeah, right. No mean feat. Okay, good. And we'll go on to verse 18. Another question, and we have the same dative plural interrogative pronoun. Tisin de omasen me eis eliusesthai eistein katapausen autu eme tois apethesasin. Apethesasin? Question. And to whom... So again, the dative interrogative pronoun, and omasen is originally the verb, I think, is omnumi. It means to swear. But you may have noticed this, Koine Greek or Hellenistic Greek likes to regularize and simplify things. So there's actually a verb by the time you get to the New Testament, omnuo. It's just a simpler form. And this would just be the aorist active. It's listed under that verb, although I didn't look it up. I think it's probably the same form from the me verb, since those are strong, notoriously strong. It means to swear an oath. So to whom, or I don't know, maybe against whom, did he swear? And now we have an infinitive, eis eliusesthai, it's deponent, right? And I think we would label this indirect discourse. But there's something missing. Normally, if you have a main verb and then an infinitive after it, whether of indirect discourse or something else, but there's no accusative subject for the infinitive. You would express the subject, you would expect the subject of the main verb to be the same as the subject of the infinitive, but that doesn't make any sense here. So to whom did he swear that he would not enter into his rest? That doesn't make any sense. And so you just have to supply something like autus. I was wondering that, and then I actually checked in Alford's commentary, and he actually makes that very comment. He says we simply have to understand that the subject of the infinitive would be them, and again, it would be accusative, and so something like autus. So to whom did he swear them not to enter, or in a better translation, that they would not enter into the rest of him, into his rest, except, he swore it, to those who apetheod. This is an epsilon contract verb, means to disobey. And this is the, you can see that stem epsilon has lengthened to eta, and you have the sigma of this short aorist stem. This is just an aorist active participle, masculine plural dative, and you're rejoicing in the article there, tois, so you can parse it, right? Now, one somewhat unusual feature is the fact that you have a future infinitive. It goes, erkomai, as you may remember, goes erkomai elusomai. You don't see that many future infinitives in the New Testament period. Now, in indirect discourse, the rule is that the infinitive of indirect discourse keeps the same stem as if it were a hati clause, or if it were direct discourse. So the fact that we have a future infinitive here means that you, if you had a direct quote, it would be, they will not enter. And so in English, because we have swore, you have to go with would. So to whom did he swear that they would not enter? Or in direct discourse, to whom did he swear, quote, they will not enter, right? So, and the answer it was to no one except to those who disobeyed. All right, verse 18 thus far. Questions? Okay, very good. Verse 19. We're about to get to the fun ambiguities here in just a second. Verse 19. Kai blepemen hati uk e dinethasen eis elthane de apistean. And here kind of in a consecutive sense, and so, my favorite paragraph, by the way, in Blasterbinder Funk, is paragraph 442, because that's the paragraph that shows you all the different contextual senses that kai can have. It's a great paragraph. There's like 13 of them or something. So, and so we see that they, this is from adunao, or aduneo, I guess, that they were not able to enter. Why? On account of unbelief, right? They had lost faith with Yahweh, and so they didn't get to enter the promised land, into the rest, right? And so that part is pretty easy. We have a nice hutty clause the way we English speakers like to have it. So, okay, so that's sort of, it doesn't actually end the comparison, because he'll kind of come back and pick up Psalm 95 again in chapter 4. Questions about anything thus far?
How far do you press the difference between Oraho and Blepo?
You know, I tend not to press it at all, to be honest. Yeah. Some of the older... even the older lexica, like Thayer, you know, will make out as if there is some sort of intrinsic, mm-hmm. you know, difference in meaning. I just think it's a matter of external entailment. Yeah.
To regain
sight or something like that. Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. No, I can't see any difference. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's a great example of this. In Moises Silva has this book called Biblical Words and Their Meanings. And he has a very nice discussion of this, in which he cites Thayer, who varies his own vocabulary without any difference in meaning while claiming that there is a difference in meaning between two Greek verbs. Mm-hmm. So I think it's the verbs ginosko and, I can't remember what the other. Yeah, something like that. Yeah, yeah. So ironically, as Thayer is explaining that there is a difference in meaning, he's illustrating that there isn't. It's actually a great example. So, yeah. Yeah, that's good. No, no. Well, you know, we're all beggars. That's linguistically and otherwise. Okay, good. Anything else on these verses? Okay, now we get directly hortatory in verse 1 and verse 2. Phobethomen un, mebita kata lepamenes epangelias. Eis elthein eistein katapausen autu, dake tis exhumon, histere kenai, yeah, that's it. Okay, the first part is easy. We have from phobeo, actually, remember that phobeo, the active voice, means, anybody? Means to frighten somebody. Yeah, it's an active transitive verb. It means to frighten. And then phobeo can mean be frightened, or can also then just mean be afraid, right? So here what would this be? Present, subjunctive, active. Well, it's a passive form. Phobethomen. Oh, so I guess that would have to be aorist, wouldn't it? Aorist, subjunctive, passive, first person plural. But it just means to be afraid, right? Therefore, let us fear, right? And of course, this is not in the sense of being afraid of a lion or something, but fearing in a godly, pious, and importantly, helpful sense. Okay, now it gets difficult. Now we have mepata after a verb of fearing, which does occur a lot, and it means lest in order that not. Okay, and now we'll go ahead and get the main verb of the mepata clause. It's dake in the second line from dakeo, which means to think or to seem. And the subject is tis, which is not the interrogative pronoun because there's no accent on it. It's the indefinite pronoun, someone. Lest someone out of you seem histere kenai, to have come short or to have failed. And again, this would be another infinitive of indirect discourse. Lest someone seem that he has failed, or something like that. Now, here's the interesting part, is the genitive absolute that's right after mepita, kata le pa menes ep angelias, the promise having been left, okay, because it's a middle participle, but it's probably a present participle passive, feminine singular genitive. Okay. Now, is this having been left in a good sense or having been left in a bad sense? The commentators tend to take it in a good sense. While a promise is being left, or, the promise is lingering or something like that. But, you know, I kind of struggled with this. I think it could also be taken in a negative sense, the promise being left behind by the people who are flirting with unbelief. See what I'm saying? And to be honest, I'm not sure what the best way to take that is. If you took it in a positive sense, it would be a gospel note. Let us fear then, lest while or even though a promise is left behind for you, is being left behind, some one of you seems to have come short or to have failed, right? Or it could be taken, lest because the promise is being left behind by you in the negative sense, and kata lepo can have either a positive or a negative force to it. So that's one interesting translational question. Now, the other one is what to do with ace el thane, to enter into his rest. Now, the way it seems to be taken by most people, the people that I looked at, is, most commentators on Hebrews, I don't know what most commentators on Hebrews say, is as a kind of epexegetical infinitive explaining promise, okay? Lest while a promise so as to enter into his rest is remaining behind, or something like that. And that is the way at least some of the big shots take it. But I actually looked up hystereo in the Septuagint, of all things. Let's hear it for Bible Works. And you can actually follow hystereo with an infinitive. There's a couple of verses in the Pentateuch that do that. And I wonder if it's at least possible to translate, lest a promise being left, someone of you may seem to have failed to enter into his rest. So I wonder if the asylthane actually functions after hystere kenai as like almost the object of what you failed to do. There's at least two grammatical choices that a person has to make. That is how you take the I guess the first one is more of a lexical choice. How do you take the force of kata le pamenes? And the other one is, what do you do with the infinitive asel thane? Right? Now, there does seem to be a majority way, but it was just interesting to me to do a little bit of work on that. Okay, questions about that? All right. We have a few minutes left, and so we'll begin the morass of verse 2. Kaigar esmen eo angelis menoi kathaper kakenoi. Al uk o felesen halagas tesakoes ekenus. Me sun ke keras menus te piste tois akusasen. Now this is the verse that Alford calls the locus desperatus. And it has to do with the variant readings and with translation. So maybe since it's almost time to stop, we'll take the first part, which is, easy enough. We have the present indicative of eme, esmen, right? We are. And now we have the perfect participle of eo angelizomai, eo angelis menoi. And together we can take this as a periphrastic participial construction. And so the present indicative plus a perfect passive would be a perfect passive verb. So, for we have been good newsed, if I could say it that way in an awkward English translation, we have had good news preached to us, just as also they. Now, you might think this is a gospel note, but it's sort of not. Because the writer is about to go on to say, but the word of hearing didn't help those people. In other words, he doesn't want his readers to say, sort of like, once saved, always saved, or something like that. Hebrews is a little grimmer, than we're often used to. And if you read that verse out of context, I think you might miss the hortatory force of it. He's kind of warning, explaining why we need to fear. Because we have been gospelized just as also those guys, right? But look, the word didn't do them any good. And so let us hold fast. I mean, that's his basic point, right? Which is, it's an exhortation, but by the time you get to it, it's also a kind of a gospel invitation, if I could say it that way, which is good for Holy Week, which is where we find ourselves. That is, let us hold fast to our confession upon which we are meditating, namely the crucified and risen Jesus. And so in the midst of all this exhortation, I thought it might be good to end on a gospel note for Holy Week. So we'll pick up here at chapter 4, verse 2, because there's some very interesting possibilities of translation in the second half of verse 2. And we'll actually look at some variant readings just to make Dr. Kloa feel good. And that's always a good thing to do. So, all right. Thank you very much.